You are listening to Microchurches, a podcast for missionaries and leaders living out their God-given calling through this small expression of the church. This podcast is meant to encourage, equip, and contribute to the overall discussion of this smaller way. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy.
You are listening to Microchurches, a podcast for people brave enough to be small. This is your host, Tommy Wilkerson, and in this season, we are talking to microchurch leaders and network leaders around the country and around the world, getting a sense of what they're learning as they go about microchurch life and working with microchurch leaders. But part of the season also has been talking with subject matter experts or just people I just really admire, look up to, and think have an interesting perspective on the church, and maybe even spiritual formation, and getting a sense of how what they're doing can inform and translate into what we're doing as microchurch practitioners. So this episode, I'm super excited. You have no idea what kind of process it's been to try to pull off this episode. And even so, we're still one man down, but it's okay. I'm so fortunate to be joined by Taylor McCall and John Dangler of Brave Cities. Guys, thank you so much for hopping on this call with me.
Yo, yo.
Yes, we made it.
Yeah, it has been quite the journey. Hugh Halter was supposed to be with us, but at the last minute had something come up. Do we know what happened to Hugh?
Yeah, it sounds like Hugh is having a double wide trailer delivered to his 80-acre farm that he will be converting into an office for the Christmas tree farm portion of the property. And I think it will also double as an Airbnb in the off season. So they kind of sprung this delivery on him last minute, and there was nothing he could do about it. He had to be there.
Yeah. He called me. He said, "Hey man, I might have to jump off early. I think they're coming this." And he called right back. He said, "No, they're here. Actually, I'm not going to be on." So,
oh my gosh.
It's happening now.
It's how life goes in the Brave Cities world.
Stop. Yeah. A Christmas tree farm. We had tried to schedule this episode earlier, and he was saying, "I can't do it. I got Christmas tree stuff." And I was like, "I don't know what that means, but okay."
Yeah.
And here we are.
Let's cross that bridge when Hugh gets on the next recording. But I'll say it like this, Tommy. I'll put it like this. We are constantly in this little ecosystem that we're forging. We're constantly throwing around new ideas for new tables to build up this city. And sometimes they're really cool, like pubs or coffee shops or travel basketball programs. And sometimes they're Christmas tree farms. So today that is what we're working on. I think we actually start planting mid-May. So right now it's prep time, and Hugh had every intention of being here, but they called him and they said, "We're on our way with the double wide."
Love it.
I love it. Well, I mean, that kind of gets us into maybe our first question. It's just, I have heard you all talk about, and a lot of what you guys are doing and have done and are consulting and writing about currently has to do with this idea of building kingdom ecosystems. And I just think it's such a fascinating concept whenever the bits and pieces of it that I know and have heard. But I would love for you guys to just explain that to our listeners and maybe elaborate. Like, yeah, you're talking about pubs and Christmas tree farms and all that and how that creates this uplifting the city. But yeah, for people who maybe aren't as familiar with that concept of that language, what do you mean by when you talk about kingdom ecosystems and building kingdom ecosystems?
Yeah, let me go outside of the box and I'll bookend it with some ancient text. Start with Revelation 18, where the writer is talking about Babylon. He says, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great." come out of her, lest you take part in her sins. And he describes her as this kind of imperial society ruled by the powers of this world. And so we see a contrast all throughout the story of God of Babylon and kingdom. And we would just kind of say subtly but passionately that the call of Jesus and the people who follow the way of Jesus is really to establish the kingdom of heaven here on earth. We see it more as a shadow of what is to come, maybe a microcosm of that, these little ecosystems that are coming out of Babylon. So you got Revelation 18 here at the start. Then at the finish, we'll take the passage in Proverbs. It says, where the righteous prosper, the city rejoices. And so the people that call themselves followers of Jesus kind of come together and they seek to see the prosperity of the kingdom, which does not necessarily manifest itself in one specific aspect of prosperity, like money or possessions, but more so freedom, thriving, liberty, unity, all the things that really smell like and taste like the kingdom. So there's this kind of controversial idea of do our cities become better and does our world become better? I would say no, never. The world has been given over to the ruler of Babylon, to the powers that reign over it. But what the kingdom call is to build a better city within your city. Mm-hmm. As that city expands, yes, your city does become better, but it's because the kingdom city is moving throughout your city. And all of that just sounds like theoretical philosophy of really what we're doing in love God and love people, the core teaching of Jesus. But the reason that it's important is because I think that we find ourselves in futile pursuits when we make an effort to negotiate with and change the cities that we live in by operating within the powers of Babylon. Practically, you know, we can kind of bob and weave throughout what that looks like, but we think it looks like creating these ecosystems, these economies of tables, where called out ones, let's just say missionaries, facilitate these spaces where we live, where we work, and where we play, where we socialize, where seekers can then come and connect, sit at those tables and connect to the hope of Jesus in everyday life. This is where disciple making happens. This is where evangelism happens. This is where compassion, grace, access to the poor. This is where sharing, finding all things in common happens. This is where creativity and innovation, incubation of new ideas happens, all throughout this ecosystem of wanting the city of God to be planted and built within our city. So that's kind of the nuts and bolts, how it manifests itself practically. We can jump all around. So John, just add a little bit to that like painting some of the lines that how it's working in your context.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just piggyback on like this, like, and maybe try to meander to context, but like, I think a lot of, as you're referencing these scriptures, one that I think to illustrate, maybe there's this story in Acts, where I think in Acts 17, it says Paul's waiting for them in Athens. And then, this is where he's like, you know, the whole, like, so he says he reasoned in the synagogues with both Jews and God-fearing Greeks, as well as in the marketplace day by day. There was a group of Epicurean and Stoic philosophers began to to debate with him, and then jump ahead a little bit. It says, and they took him and brought him to a meeting in the Areopagus, where they said to him that maybe you know your teachings and what you're presenting. So that little setting, I think, is really helpful to get some context for like what was this idea, even of the word that Jesus used is like ecclesia. So this like place where it says they were in the marketplace is called the Agora, right? It's like a town square where people would gather. And actually, this Areopagus is like there's a group of people that would meet regularly, like daily, to hear out like what's going on in the city. But then every 10 days, they would call, this is in Athens, they would call together this like early democratic society. They would call together every kind of voting age male, I think is how they worked there, bring them together and say, hey, like over the last 10 days, these are things that come up. We need to vote on these. And that group of people would have been called the Ecclesia. It was like every person would come out for this participatory democracy. And these are all people that spent their time day in and day out working in the marketplace or the Agora. And it always like trips me up when I think about that. Like, we know the word Agora because of agoraphobic, like to be afraid. That's to be afraid of going outside. But in this very real way, it's like what we know, what we have come to call church, is something that looks very agoraphobic, something that is not engaging in the marketplace or the town square, and is not functioning as participatory democracy. And so at some level, like to say, like for me, then I'm like, oh, okay. Then when I look at what we're building, I'm looking at that example. Like, what's the word that Jesus chose to use for his people? And what was the reference that he was making? And so then I'm like, okay, well then it's like, and this is why it might look like Christmas trees or bike shops or community gardens, because it's actually like set, like Taylor used the image of like setting tables. So we want to set lots of tables, like you might set up in a marketplace, that bring people together around commerce, around building community, shoulder to shoulder work, kind of day to day, what goes on in real life. And then, you know, and then you have this rhythm where you're kind of called together at some regular rhythm, like say 10 days, and say like, we have decisions to make as a community, because everybody needs to weigh in on the direction of the community and the ways that we're going. And this word that Jesus chose, that we decided to translate church, and then we built these all these constructs, I would just say, I started to say, well, why don't I forget all of this that I know about what I see and call church, forget that, go to this early word, find out what that was. And I don't know if this is helping fill in, but like for me then, what does it look like to be that people? And it looks a lot like a community of people building a bike shop, a community of people setting tables to share food in the community, you know, to build houses, to engage in marketplace. And this then is like, not that we're building kingdom, we're building businesses, we're building tables. But we're finding, we're uncovering the presence of, right. We like want to set tables in a way that makes it easier for us to encounter one another in the presence of God in one another, where we find that the kingdom emerges in these ecosystems.
Yeah. And one more thing, tell me, I think John just kind of glossed over it, and I'd like to emphasize it again. You won't find, a chapter and verse that says really much of anything about us building the kingdom of heaven. So we would challenge, and again, for real practical purposes, we would challenge that idea with saying that the kingdom has always been here. It's kind of the idea of the garden, that's here on earth, but it's covered up in the vines and the dust and the debris of Babylon. Our role as missionaries is we function first and foremost as archaeologists to really begin to try to uncover the kingdom in our context. How is it working and functioning? How can we see it? And it involves a lot of listening and a lot of patience. We talk about this process of archaeology, artistry, and architecture. And I think that too often we jump straight to the architecture especially in the West and in more kind of first world innovative context, we jump straight into this architecture, which really is more of an imperial, more of like a colonizer idea of I'm just going to go in and I'm going to take over. I'm going to create dominion for our group and myself in this context. And I'm going to architect what is good and what needs to be there. And the reason that the order of archaeology, artistry, and architecture is there is because the archaeology portion is really just an uncovering of what, God, what are you doing here? And what have you been doing here for millennia? Let's listen and see and observe and uncover. And then the artistry, we can break all these down if you want to, but I think it's pretty basic. The artistry is now we begin to get in cadence with the proverbial BPMs of God, to get on pace with what his heart is doing here, to write the song and sing the song that he's singing, not necessarily karaoke, all the pop songs that everybody else is singing that seems to be selling to all the consumers. And as we hear the song and we write the song, we paint the portrait, we then begin to architect and set the tables that he wants us to set in our context. And I think it's just a simple but a somewhat necessary idea to really slow our missionaries down and say, hey, what if you could build a little city, like an alternate society that doesn't posture itself as alternate in the sense of separatism, but postures itself as something different than the story that the world is telling.
So good. I mean, there's so many questions. I mean, I have a list of questions here, and listening to you speak, I have more. I feel like I say that every episode, but it's true. Because, I mean, I think I'm of two minds. All right, so I realized we started this episode and we just kind of dove right into it. There was no real introduction of who you are, what Brave Cities is. And so we can talk about that too. Like there's some role, some element that probably should play in this episode. So like, what is Brave Cities and what does it do? And that kind of gets into the question of this kingdom ecosystem conversation. But then also, as you're talking about separatism and kind of creating these tables, I do feel like what I've seen in some spaces, or I've heard from some spaces, because I think we see it in scripture, like the way that, you look at something like Acts 2, and there's a way in which the believers are together every day. They have everything in common. There's no need that someone isn't willing to meet. So they're like, whatever, we're selling property, we're giving the money to the apostles to distribute as they see fit. And so there's a way that they're taking care of each other. Right. And so there's a way that maybe I've seen Christians in the church try to do that. Like, we're going to be the church that does this. Like, we exist. But even in that, there's still an element of like people being added to their number daily. There's like there's a missional outward component. But maybe sometimes what I see in certain circles is like, okay, yeah, we're going to try to meet these needs right here and exist for each other. We're going to be each other's education system. We're going to be each other's medical system. We're going to, whatever, all the money that we would normally give to Babylon, perhaps, we're just going to circulate here within our circle. And there's a way that it's almost like the opposite of that is almost what I'm hearing. It's like, yeah, we're cool, but like, how do we seek the welfare of the city? Wondering, like, what's the, is there like, are those two disconnected ideas? How do they relate to each other?
This is a really good thing for John and I to kind of pull on together, because I think we can come at this from two directions that help unpack the idea. It's definitely not the opposite of that. It's definitely not the same either. I would say it is more fluid, and it has to be more fluid. Just when you think about everyday life, like how we navigate our lives is such a work of art. It's not, there's no paint by number in this process and in the story that Jesus is trying to tell. So if somebody's saying, so do we start our own health insurance company? Sure. Should we pay Blue Cross Blue Shield? Sure. Do we start our own coffee shop? Yeah, that'd be great. Should we go to the local coffee shop in our neighborhood? Yeah, that's a good idea. Like, you, too many people, and hear this, whoever's listening, for the four people that listen to this podcast, too many people are looking for a paint by number in this journey with Jesus and telling the story. And I just don't think he's interested in giving you the notes. I think he wants you to hear the song that he's singing his context, in your context. So I want to say that as a precursor. And then I want to try to like somewhat attempt to attack the question of what does finding all things in common look like? What does added to their number? Let's just say added to their number, which is not prescriptive, by the way. I don't know why people look at that and say, oh, okay, so people should be added to our number daily. Well, that didn't happen with Jesus. But let's just say we're looking at that through a monolithic lens. Well, I'm sitting in a 17,000 square foot restaurant, coffee shop, and event center that we started here in Alton. After this, I'm going to head over to Ferguson. I actually am. I'm heading over to Ferguson at 1:15 p.m. to meet with some students from a high school in St. Louis who are going to start our woodworking program at our Soulcraft Makerspace. And then I'll give one more example. From there, I'm leaving and I'm going to the gym in Alton that we're partnered with to meet with our 14U travel basketball team. We're doing weights and conditioning today from 5 to 6 p.m. In all of those spaces, at all of those tables that we've set, those are just three that I'm connected with today. People are being added to our number daily. How that looks, what that manifests itself as, are they saved? Are they not saved? How many have been baptized? I think all that is actually kind of nonsense. I think it's way above our pay grade, and it really should have very little to do with what we actually think about. The question is are we setting tables where seekers can be added to our number daily, where they can come and sit and sniff, where they can come and sit and taste and say, this aroma, this is delightful. Like I've never felt, and I'm not saying people say it this way, but just think about it this way. Mm-hmm. I've never felt like this known, or I've never felt this safe, or I never had a dad and I feel like I got a couple now with my coaches, or no one's ever taught me how to build a box and this man's teaching me how to use power tools or how to cut 45s. And like, are people being added to these ecosystems numbers daily? Absolutely they are. But how that looks and how it manifests itself is not necessarily does not necessarily fall within the evangelical dogma that we've articulated for years and years. So I'll hit that part of the question because I think it's an important part. John, what you got?
Yeah, I mean, you know, what's interesting is like, as I'm listening to you talk too, like, I mean, not just come and taste and come and see, but come and work. Like there's people that work shoulder to shoulder with us, which is where that are maybe not believers, that are not engaged, but like find camaraderie together with us and actually meaning purpose in life to go, we're in this together. Like, let's work and love and serve our neighbors together. And actually that leads to unbelievable transformation in folks, because it's actually the doing. The doing is the actual message, right? That then later we process like, man, why is that so meaningful? Why does this feel so right and good? Well, incidentally, you were maybe created to do this. But then I was thinking about the adding to their numbers, and I just quickly like thought about our last couple years. And the reality is, and I'm not going to quote this exactly right, but who is faithful with very little will be faithful with much, or the idea of like being trusted with
murder
kind of thing, right? So like the what I've seen happen, including last week, so I'll go backwards. Last week, a friend that I've known literally since my first Bible study at community college, was the dude that we met there who's still like, I haven't heard from him in years. He calls me and we're catching up. He's telling me about this. And I actually talked to him years ago and he had this idea for a nonprofit that he wanted to build. And it's years later. And I was like, hey man, what's up with that? How's that going? And he's like, it's still like on the to-do list, you know? And then we chatted and then we met and we said, well, why don't we plug that into our ecosystem? Why don't we just get the ball rolling? You don't have to go start another nonprofit because of the model we have set up. We'll launch an LLC. And last week we launched a thing called City Builds and we're going to actually tackle like some like development projects together and learn. Like we both know this might tank, but it might go really well. And it might be the best thing we ever did. We don't know yet. But like adding to our number, like projects and table building. And then I was like, you know, recently, we were tapped, and commissioned really with some grant, resources to gather, leaders from throughout our city. And we were able to like single out people that we think are doing work that feels like, or smells like familiar or familial. And we gather them and had resources now to gather this, we're calling the 813 collective, this cohort of people that we're now gathering and building real family and community with. And then just 2 years ago, there was a girl that I really, well, 3 years ago, I tried to recruit this brilliant girl from that I met at USF and she was about to graduate. And I couldn't get her because she had too many things going on. She's graduating with a master's and works with this other nonprofit. And I was like, yeah, of course I can't get you because we don't have resources and whatever. But there was a real resonance between us. And then COVID hit. The nonprofit she was working for closed its doors. She said, over my dead body, are we going to stop this? Remembered our conversation, called me, said, hey, can we, I have a team and work that we do with like food and children and education. And it's so aligned. And I, since I met you and you guys called, it had like well built, I've been thinking about this idea called well fed and we want to rebrand. And I was like, you don't have to like brand it like that. Or she's like, no, I want a well fed community, a community that's fed well. Can we bring this into the ecosystem? And so we started with them. I just looked at these numbers 2 years ago. We had like $1,000 and a team of these four girls that came in. Today, like they have a $200,000 budget this year. That group, they've hired multiple staff, have multiple interns, are running programs all over the city. I can't keep up with them. And I'm like, I don't even know the amount of things that are going on because of what they've done, what WellFed has done. And it's like, literally, like, I just, when you said like they're added to their numbers and then I go, and you know, it's those who are being saved. I'm like, I don't know, go ask them. Go talk to them because I'll bet you anything they're thriving and happier and healthier and closer to God and more a sense of community and purpose and meaning and worth. And that sounds and looks a lot like salvation and resurrection to me. And I just go, man, I don't know. I don't have what it takes. And I just go, let's just be faithful with the task at hand and the relationships at hand and not have like a bunch of like hooks to set or things for our friends to live up to. And it turns out that this shit just kind of happens. It just kind of unfolds and it blows my mind actually. Like we look back and that's why when Taylor says like, well, okay, so how did you, okay, so what did you do first? Okay. You started like a dinner. Is that what you did? And it's like, man, it doesn't matter. Like literally do anything and just do it in try to embody presence and faithfulness.
Yeah. And tell me
that you can.
Super important point, probably more than we could emphasize. Everybody wants to be architects, especially in this kind of missional conversation. And the archaeology and artistry journey of this story is of seminal importance, just utmost importance.
I think an important, so you said, Taylor, you said something when you started about the, I don't know why we treat that like it's prescriptive. And I forget exactly what you're referring to, the early church kind of prescriptive, we treat it like it's prescriptive, adding to their numbers or whatever in that measure. But here's the thing is, name any hero of the faith, name anyone. So I don't know, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, Dorothy Day, Peter Moore, like these are heroes of mine, right? But like their lives could not have been prescribed, especially like Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who was to say like the Christian life is going to look like attempted assassination attempts against the political leader in your country, because it was Nazi Germany and he was party to, he was a double agent working to assassinate because of his faith orientation and his faithfulness to Jesus, and still kind of knew like it's wrong to kill and I have no choice. And that couldn't have been prescribed. Who could have said this is the thing to do? This is like the mistake of the Pharisees, is like, I'm going to tell you what every right move is at every step of the way. What's interesting is you can only describe their lives. That's why we have these heroes. Like, I can look at their lives, but then what that means for you today in this moment, in this setting, what does faithfulness look like? I cannot tell you that. No one else can tell you that. And so this is the risk of faith. You're on your own, bud. And you have to like try to act in faith in the presence and in full sight of God now to do what's right now. And that is unfortunately just on you. So we can model it, we can encourage it, we can describe it, but none of this actually can be prescribed.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to hear you say that, because as you're talking about some of the initiatives, you know, in particular you, Taylor, you're talking about, whether that's the woodworking or the, you know, the basketball team, the Christmas tree farm, it's like, part of me is wondering, like, okay, I'm envisioning like you guys sitting in a living room, maybe over a table, dinner table or something, and it's just kind of like, what does the city need? I think it could really benefit from this. It could benefit from a traveling basketball team. It could benefit from some sort of woodworking program. Or like, is that how it's determined? Is it like needs assessment? Is it like, these are the things that we have, let's figure out a creative way to elevate the city? Like, and I mean, John, for you, it's bikes. I mean, there's so many things that, you know, things that you're doing. And I guess as much as we're saying like, yeah, it can't be prescribed necessarily, I am curious about maybe the thought process behind some of the things that you guys have started. And maybe, you know, with that, so I guess John is kind of answering this a little bit, but like, as we talk about ecosystems and kingdom ecosystems, as it pertains maybe even to micro churches, are these things, these initiatives that are getting started, are they a microchurch? Are they an outreach of a microchurch? I mean, maybe for you guys are like, whatever, rebels. So you might not even say, who cares about microchurches in general? Who uses that language anyway? But I guess all these things come flooding to my mind. And
yeah, probably. Perspective. Well, you gave a few questions, a few ideas there, so we'll just tackle them. I probably would. Just to be honest with you, would say that. I would say, who cares? And I would say that about any of the language that we use. And I think as I'm more trying to fake it till I make it also sometimes, because the wise men and women that I know that have been at this far, far longer than either of us three would say, who cares? And so I'm kind of taking my cues from them as well to see that none of this stuff really matters. Like what we call things, how we articulate it, as a brand. But I would also say, Tony, that, you know, if someone came to me and said, so is Beyond Basketball, is that a micro church? I would say, sure, absolutely. What do you mean? Like, tell me, I would have to ask them, if it was you, I would say, sure. If it was someone, I would have to say, tell me what a micro church is. And if they said it's an expression of mission, it's an expression of community, and it's an expression of worship, kind of actively working as one unified effort, then yeah, 100% it is. I think if you pushed me into my corner of how would you break this down, I would say the church just functions as a unified family, usually within a geographical context. What we're trying to do is we're trying to create a field, a soil that is rich for planting, for creativity and innovation, for purpose and passion. So now I'm segueing into the second part of what you said. how do these things come about? Almost always from people who are inspired and want to live an inspired life. John's story of the well-fed, my story of really all three of the things that I named that I'm just touching base with today, they're all connected to people. David McCann here at The Post, Rodney Fickus over at Soulcraft, Montega Lowe over at Beyond Basketball. People who had a passion, who wanted to direct that passion with a specific purpose. What we did is we were, and I think this is this really falls under the apostolic edge. We were able to set a field in place and kind of till a soil in such a way that they felt like I can go and plant there. And they're gonna somewhat give me the resources, both tangible and intangible, to bring about this passion and purpose. And that's almost always how these tables are set. Sure, we sit around in our living rooms over a nice bourbon and talk about what we want for the city. Those are our prayers. That happens all the time. We started talking about athletics, using athletics to connect with the young people in Alton, probably around 2021, weekly, through these conversations. Though we always see those as our prayer time, as our, you know, asking God for wisdom and direction and provision. And somewhere along the way, he almost always brings along a person, a torch carrier, a director, if you will, of this, an overseer of this table. And so, yeah, I think a lot of times our language ebbs and flows throughout our kind of our particular way, our paradigm of seeing the world. But they always tend to be, it always tends to kind of be somewhat the same thing. I just always caution people against or away from the paint by number folks, because I think they'll eat your soul. I think they'll come to you minute after minute, day after day, year after year, saying, tell me the A to B to C line so I can paint the same picture that you painted, because that seems like it's the new way. And I would really caution leaders away from, at least to direct them towards what John is saying, to say, there's no prescription here, bro. This is a life. This is like a painting that I can't tell you how to paint. And I want to help inspire you to live it in your context, but I can't give you, the tools are love, joy, peace, and patience, man. The tools are love your God and love your neighbor. The tools are be faithful with little. I don't have to give you the tools. They're already there in the text.
That's great. The only thing I would add to how things start, because I think that is actually the case most of the time, is like some inspiration, some person with a skill or passion that you get behind or builds community around. And it's a thing that like it just comes from you naturally. You were like created to create that thing in some like entrepreneurial way. And then we try to incubate and care for that. The other thing I was thinking through, a lot of stuff we've done has been even the bike shop. It was request. So like no one asked us to start a bike shop, but people who lived on the streets couldn't get anywhere. So they're like, look, opportunity is few and far between. And when it comes up, it's way across town and the bus system here sucks and I can't afford it. What am I supposed to do?
And how did you know that?
Because we're in relationship. So we ran a daytime drop-in center. We hung out with all the homeless people every day. And they were like, and I was like, well, Magic has a bike and Magic doesn't have that problem. And so then we got a bunch of broken bikes and was like, hey, if you have that problem, there's a wrench and there's some broken bikes. I bet you could figure it out. And then people started putting bikes together and we realized this is accidentally the best thing we've ever done, because not only could they get to opportunities and resources and economy around the rest of the city, but they got physically fit and mentally healthier and like a ton of, you know, it's just like and rode in little crews and had like community and connection that we had never, and had built it and was proud of it and did meaningful work. And I was like, oh man, wow, what did we stumble into? We should quit everything we're doing and just work on these bikes. But John, like me, I'm still not that I love these tools because they're such good tools. But I'm not exactly like the bike dude. I always get a kick out of that. People are like, oh, the bike guy. I'm like, yeah. I mean, we have a bike shop, you know? And then when I think about like our earliest community dinners, it literally was, and you know, when you asked about the micro church, my head still goes to, and this is like, I get the lens and the kind of community worship mission and it's whatever with language. I personally never want to use the word church again, ever in my life. Like I think it's ruined, unhelpful, and it's not a useful word, which is why I want to take the original or whatever. We're like, yeah, ecclesia, that meant something. I want to focus on that. Microchurch is a version of that. It's like that small. Well, I'm into small. I think small is really good. But my mind's like tonight, I'm going to have, like, we're studying Luke with a group of people that come to my house and we eat. I still think that liturgical community that meets in my house would be the thing that comes to mind when I hear someone say like micro church, because it's liturgical. Whereas like, but like, is there worship community and mission in the kinship and in the bike shop and in these other places? So yes. And then in different degrees at different times, like, it's like, the kingdom comes and goes here. You know, sometimes it's the pit of hell, to be honest with you. And sometimes it's the presence of the throne room of God in the very same, like, mechanic stand or whatever, depending on the interactions. But like the first community dinner that we set was back in the day. We had people coming over, having one of these liturgical community dinners at my house, doing a Bible study. And we had some homeless guys there. And those guys said, you know what? This is way back. Tampa's great. You can eat almost every day here, except for Thursday. There's nowhere to eat on Thursday. And a bunch of us looked at each other and said, we can do that. We'll start a meal on Thursdays. Like, it was just, it was told to us. So the only prescription could ever come was from listening to the community that has the needs and being committed to neighborliness. So my neighbors have a need, show up. Oh, and oh, by the way, why were we in those relationships? Because that's where Jesus said he would be, and we were trying to find him. And so we found ourselves among hurting and poor people, hungry people, naked people. And then we just listened to what those people had to say, like Jesus had something to say to us. So that was the other start place, because a lot of times it is like just asked for.
Yeah, yeah. I think the reason why I asked that question is because, yeah, I hear what you guys do, and I know to an extent what you do. You know, maybe less familiar with Taylor and Hugh and some of the things you guys have going on in Alton. And there's a way in which I know that you lead churches, you lead ministries, you lead people in some form or capacity in this smaller way. And then to think about, like, okay, well, if that's so, well, then how do microchurches begin to either see themselves as kingdom ecosystems? Is that something that you start out thinking, like, man, I want to start a kingdom ecosystem, I want to contribute to a kingdom ecosystem of some sort? Or is it something that microchurches just kind of stumble their way into as they're in relationship with people, that it's like, oh, wait, actually, I think we need to figure out some way to tackle this barrier? Because, I mean, love will inspire innovation and advancement in some way. And so I think that was like a question that I had, was like, how can microchurches begin to think of themselves or see themselves as either part of or a kingdom ecosystem? And so I don't know if that's a good question, but if you have an answer for it, go for it.
Johnny Produce.
Yeah, right. We need Mr. Practical Hugh. I don't know, man. I really don't know. In many ways, like, I almost want to like recommend fasting from the thing you're doing. Like, hey, microchurch, stop doing microchurch. Like, just like stick for a minute. Like, let's stop and try, like, I don't know. Like, and this is the thing. It's like, because here's the thing is, like, those are conceptually, they're still set aside spaces. So like, this is tricky, because like, you're actually saying, like, well, how, like, it's actually like to sit in the bar and know the regulars, like you're at Cheers, or to go, like last night, I mean, this is ridiculous, but we went and my wife and I went and grabbed some food and literally just sat next to this Caribbean couple, and like, just, we didn't talk to each other because we talked to them all night. I don't think that was on us. I think they were particularly open to that. But like, this crazy thing is like, you just get in the marketplace and don't be agoraphobic. So like, this is the, and I don't know, you got to look in the mirror. I don't want to wag a finger like and say, but I like, how do you transition from this to this? And I want to say something like discontent. Like, if you're happy with what you're doing, maybe you don't need to do that. Maybe you don't need to see that. I was not. Like, I was very much not fulfilled in that or happy with that. It wasn't enough for me. It was like, and part of this for me was like, I wanted to find ways to make things sustainable. One, because we have all these needs around us, economic needs, and I'm never going to be a good enough fundraiser to do anything about these. So I'm like, we need to build economies, actually. And at some level, I'm like, I think that whole like Oikos household, that's the beginning of it. It's like all just so basic. It's like, well, you have to build economy. Well, how are you going to build economy? Well, you're going to have to work, and you're going to have to like have, you're going to have exchange, and you're going to have community. You're going to have to lean on each other, depend on each other. And like, I don't know, at some level like that, hopefully it's clear. You asked this how to, and I go, I don't know, man.
Yeah. I want to try to respond. The reason I haven't is I almost think, Tomi, we should consider doing an entire podcast about that one question. Because it feels like there's such a necessary nuance and even like a fluid dialogue needed through that. Like, there's a lot of questions that I would have to ask. And it would need to be a pretty raw and vulnerable conversation. And a lot of the context that I see, I'm just going to speak like maybe a little prophetically. I think we're still a bit conditioned to succumb to the consumer. We live in this kind of twilight zone of Western evangelicalism that's really ebbed and flowed, I think, since the Protestant Reformation, maybe before, probably Constantine, of this consumeristic mindset and model of, I'm going to just go somewhere and I'm going to be fed by these more mature versions of myself, what I want to be. Okay, so let's put a pin in that. And we're working in that field now. And now we have to figure out how to, but the reality is, let's make that an alternate reality. The reality is, almost everyone is living their life in a pretty consistent and normal way of waking up, raising their kids, figuring out what they're going to do for work, paying their bills, even if not, they're not raising their own kids. They're kind of, they're facilitating something that is childlike to them, that really matters to them. They're going to work, they're getting off of or finishing work, coming home. It's time for a meal. It's time for, you know, we're living our lives. We're doing extracurricular stuff. What we've done by and large, and this is not an accusation towards any specific movement or person, but what we've done with certain movements like cell groups, small groups, missional communities, microchurches, so on, it will continue, is we've just kind of created a new way and a better way. I've seen every iteration is a better way of creating that fourth space where people can come and like get a break from their everyday life. I think that's great. I want that in my ecosystem. What I'm saying is, we want kingdom to consume your everyday life. Everything you do.
Yeah.
Where you decide to live, where you decide to work and how, where you decide to socialize and play and and interact with others in a in an enjoyable, pleasureful way, and how and why. And that would, that kingdom call, that prophetic edge, that apostolic edge would consume all of those spaces.
Yeah.
Then when we want to worship community and mission, when we want to ecclesia a bit, gather and remember over a nice meal or a nice drink, hell yeah, do it. We need it. We need that respite and that refuge and that rest. But it, I want to say again, I've already said it, but I just want to kind of end with this, because I think that this needs to be another conversation. That all of these iterations of church, which I really appreciate John saying, I'm just done with it. Because it's not that he's done actively, functionally, or theologically with church.
Not at all.
He's done fighting against this exhausting wave of let's constantly try to make the exact same thing a little better in this new iteration. We want to inspire a way of life that is all consuming for anyone who wants it, an alternate society. But here's the good news of it. If you just want to come and sit at the table for a moment and rest, and you don't really want to live in the city, you're welcome. Come on. Have a seat. Rest for a minute, dude. Have a drink. Tell a story. And then if you want to jump back into the grind of trying to make it in Babylon, we love you. I'm with you. Some days I'm there, man. Worry. Anxiety, pride, pain, trauma, get it all. So that's like the start, I would say, of a thread that I'd like to pull on together of saying, nah, it's not about microchurches becoming kingdom ecosystems. It's not even about decentralized networks, man. I think it's more decentralized is necessary, but I think it's more a distributed people who are finding all things in common in this ecosystem. And if tables or micro churches, it doesn't matter. It's the same thing. It's just an expression of a passion and purpose. You can call them missional communities. You can call them cell groups. You can call them house churches. You can call them organic churches. What do you call them, John? Hanging out? Call them whatever you want.
I think that's a really good point, because in that lens of like the tables, like all of this becomes a table where people can gather, and any of those tables can be used, can become a place for the presence of the kingdom, including the most old school traditional model of a church building with a steeple, right, and pastor and pews, because it's like there are very real places that actually is functioning as a kingdom presence in the world, right. And it isn't that because it's that, like, it isn't that because of steeple, because of building, it's in spite of or it doesn't matter that it's there, or a ball field or a bike shop or a garden. It's what goes on in that space. And so what this framing does is it doesn't need to pit these against each other, but to recognize like that. So maybe this is back to your answer, that microchurch is to find itself in as a table being set in a larger body, in a larger work, in a larger thing that is going on that maybe they set other tables like that. And some tables can look like pickleball, and some can look like a steeple, and some can look, you know, there's like all of these different places. Some can look like a pub, right? Or a barbershop.
It is astounding to me how many times a leader or, you know, a version of Christian will come into our context, and we'll be gathered around the table in some setting. But again, just think of the three that I mentioned today. We'll be gathered in a space. Jesus will be at the center of our conversation. He's being worshiped. Community is happening. We're in the midst of mission. And they will say to me, so when does your church gather? Unbelievable. We are so conditioned, like concretely conditioned to only view church through this really specific fourth space paradigm. Like, where do we go to then have fill in the blank? Cell group, small group, microchurch, kingdom, whatever. What do we call it?
Well, I think that might be why. Yeah, I think that might be why I was saying, like, what comes to my mind is what we're going to do tonight, which I would just say is a liturgical community gathering. Like, we are going to use a prayer book. We're going to read Luke. Yep. We're going to pray and explicitly, like, it's like, we're going to do that. Right.
Yep.
And I'm like, that isn't like better, or it's a different thing we're doing there. It's like, but it's connected to the work we're doing in the shop and this other place and this other place. It's just another table. It's one. Yeah. It's an important table. It's a table I like to come to, but that thing you're saying is like, we mean liturgical gathering. Like,
yep.
And I'm like, well, that's what that is. And we do that.
And if there is a guy, this might be controversial. If there is a guy that only wants to come to your home on a Wednesday night and go through that prayer book, and there's a handful of other people that want to show up in the bike shop, roll their sleeves up, get grease on their hands.
Yeah.
No, bro, I'm telling you, cool, good. That's where you connect to Jesus. That's,
yeah, you can come to that, but you're missing it entirely. Yep.
I agree.
Missing it entirely.
I agree. But what I'm saying is you're welcome at that table. That's where you feel. There's other people who come to the bike
ride,
roll up their sleeves, work their ass off, but don't want to come to your house on a Wednesday night. And I would say to them, you're missing it entirely.
Yep. And we often are saying, man, I wish you were at this. That's right. At the fuller, there's so, we come to all these tables. And yet at the same time, I would say a lot, the Bible study is the one most susceptible to miss it, because I think it's the only place that it can't be integrated in life. It's actually set apart by nature. And so an integrated life can be lived in the bike shop. You actually don't need to go to this other thing. It can all be done right there in the presence of the shop and the Lord. It's like, it can all be in the mix. That doesn't mean it is for everybody and all the time, but it can.
I like that. I like that. And I, for someone that's critically listening, I don't want them to hear me changing my position of they're missing it entirely by not going to the Bible study. I still believe they are. If there's an obstinance of, I ain't going to that thing.
We definitely have those.
But if there is,
and I'm like, I feel you.
But I like what you're saying, man, because rarely, if ever, do I find myself in the rhythms of everyday life that Bible study is not happening, that worship and prayer and mission and community is not happening. But almost always, when I see someone that their spiritual rhythms, their faith rhythms only revolve around a quote unquote sacred space, they're missing so many elements.
We struggle with application and exercise and go and do likewise. And that is the challenge for most Bible study leaders. Most, it's like, well, damn, I need to get y'all to like go do something now. And we try. But typically, and that's what all of the Wells work grew out of. We were doing that. And someone said, there's nowhere to eat on Thursday. So we did that. And then people are like, man, we're arrested everywhere we go, so we need to set up a drop-in center. And eventually we got so busy responding to the needs of those that we met by doing exactly that we actually for a long time stopped doing that. There was no space for that. Like, we don't have set aside time for Bible study for a long time, actually. And then eventually realized, like, some of us were like, really missed it, really hungry.
That's not good.
Needed to get it. No, and I agree. But like, the work got so serious. Like, we were like, oh, responding to all these things. And we went a good long season without that, but it wasn't missing in the work. Like, there was, like you said, like, we're now this stuff has been invested in us, and we're reciting it internally and to one another all the time to do the work. But a good chunk of time went by where we're like, we're not gathering and like opening up Luke anymore. And I was like, hey, I kind of missed that. Do you miss that? And a couple of us did. And we said, oh, let's do that again. And so I'm glad to say we're, you know, going to get to go do that here in a little bit.
That's cool. Well, I mean, that maybe is a good place as any to end it, because I agree with you, Taylor. I feel like even in talking with you guys that there is more conversation to be had. And maybe a piece of that conversation I want to get into is, you know, stories. So stories of things that you're doing. So you kind of hit at some things already. So kind of like making this idea, this abstract idea of kingdom ecosystems a little bit more concrete and tangible for people to access. So I think that'd be one thing. But then another episode around lessons learned across the journey. So like persevering, failures, pivoting, all of that. And so that element of like, we didn't do this for a while, and actually we needed it. Like, we had to come back to it at some point. I think that's an important lesson, or maybe there's something that you learned in the journey. And I would want the follow-up conversation from this to kind of flow out of that. And so, yeah, so we'll get that on the books, and maybe Hugh will not have a double wide for an office of Christmas trees and all sorts of crazy stuff that Hugh does. And he can be in that too. But guys, thank you so much for being on this podcast. Like I said, for the listener, you have no idea what hurdles we went through to even record this. So if we do record a second episode sometime before Jesus returns, that I'll take that as like an insane victory. And if Jesus returns before, like if he returns soon, I also take that as victory. So it is what it is. But this has been Microchurches. Oh, there is a book. You guys are writing a book. It is, or you've written the book. It's in the works now to like actually hit the shelves. And that'll be coming out hopefully fall this year. And so be on the lookout. It is called Brave Cities. And so I don't know when you're listening to this, but be on the lookout for that book from Hugh, Taylor, and John. So this has been Microchurches. Until next time.